Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, Katie Galley with Atlanta Business Radio, but we're doing a very special episode of this show. It's the Supply Chain Now Radio episode, I believe, 12, Katie.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty great. 12 episodes. That's awesome. And it is time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the East Coast, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day.
All right. I got with me Scott Luden, the real host of this show, who's the executive VP with Apex Atlanta. And Apex is the leading, if you don't know, which everybody here knows,
that's right.
Apex is the leading industry association dedicated to end-to-end supply chain management, especially when we don't bring in those other associations that are related to that. Right?
Well, they had to know that to get into the studio today.
Exactly.
So, but we've got a great show lined up today, Lee. Glad to be here. Episode number 12. Out of 2,000, I think.
That's right. That's on the roadmap.
And we've got a trio of power hitters today, starting off with Mr. John Haber, founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Followed by Matt Bean, General Manager, Kick Custom Products. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you.
Glad you're here as well. 2 days in a row this week. Good to see you again. And Chris Barnes, President and Executive Director of Apex Atlanta. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Scott. And I just realized with you and I here, nobody's managing the shop today. So.
That's right. So as always, Lee, we're going to lead off with top things to know.
Top things. I see how that's evolved.
Yes, it's evolved. You know.
And now all it says is TBD on my sheet.
Oh, man, I like that.
It's changed dramatically over the months.
I love new acronyms. So we're going to lead off with how much more demanding customers are as it relates to supply chain visibility and performance. So according to a global survey, 78% of consumers want to receive updates on the status of their orders when purchasing goods. They want to know where it is and when they can expect it. And more interesting, they won't hesitate to switch brands if supply chain performance from their retailers fails to meet their expectations. So this global survey, which is very telling in the evolution of consumers' demands, was conducted by YouGov, sponsored by M4, and reported by Supply Chain Digital. So Lee, when we order something, we want to see where it is and when we can expect it and use it, right?
It makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Speaking of these more demanding customers like Lee Cantor, let's focus in on those based in urban areas. So urban logistics, point number two here, urban logistics is reportedly, quote unquote, the new battleground in retail. According to a recent survey by Auburn University, 80% of retailers surveyed said that urban fulfillment is an area of growth. However, the opportunity doesn't come without its challenges as anything else, right? 40% of the same folks describe that the final mile cost is a huge challenge. So to capitalize on the urban fulfillment opportunity, retailers are doing things like spending more on technology year over year in terms of 2018 over 2017. They're using stores as fulfillment centers, and we've had some different experiences in our warm-up conversation related to that. Retailers are also contracting with on-demand service providers and expanding the use of local couriers for growing urban deliveries. So urban logistics, of course, here in Metro Atlanta, the supply chain capital of the East Coast, soon to be promoted to the universe, right, Lee? Huge challenge here, especially with traffic and some other local challenges.
And then did you see that Amazon's now trying to deliver to the trunk of your car?
I did. It's interesting that you raised that point. Topic number three, speaking of those urban markets, Jeff B. and the Amazon team are rolling out yet another neat idea. They are delivering to cars now. So in 37 major U.S. metro markets, Amazon will be delivering packages to the cars where they're partnering with General Motors and Volvo and those late models satellite communications systems such as OnStar, right? I guess Amazon's going to show up. They'll send a signal to unlock the trunk or the door. They'll stick the package in and then it'll relock and then they're on to their next delivery. So what a neat, you know, as you're at work maybe, or if you're at a radio show, you can get deliveries right here and have it with you on your way home. So
Scott, I'm going to have to clean my trunk out.
Absolutely. But of course, I think a key part of this development is you've got to be an Amazon Prime member. So it keeps that retention in place. And evidently early feedback is that it's customers appreciate it. It's been successful. They're looking to expand it to other locations as well as more makes and models moving forward. No news yet if they're going to expand it to Honda Accords. So that's what I'm waiting to see if they're going to do that. Chris, one more top thing to know in supply chain now. What did we miss?
Yeah, Scott, well, it's a trend, but it's been going on for several years. It's the, especially if you're a shipper, it's a big impact. And talk about the final mile deliveries. If you're shipping cases to end users or to other businesses, there's a thing called bundling now that a lot of shippers are not taking advantage of. If you ship small cases, you're having to pay somewhat of a dimensional weight factor to the parcel carrier specifically. And what we talked about earlier today is it's cheaper to send two small packages bundled together as one than it is to send two small packages separately. So it's something that's called dim weights. The FedEx, UPS, they've implemented the costing a couple years ago, but I still talk to many customers today at a very tactical cost savings level that aren't taking advantage of looking at bundling opportunities.
Terrific environment to take advantage of every opportunity to save on cost. So that concludes our top things to know in supply chain now. And as I mentioned, Lee, we've got a great trio of power hitters sharing some perspective on all things supply chain today. We're going to lead off our first guest today on Supply Chain Now Radio. We welcome supply chain and logistics industry expert, John Haber, who is also founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts. Good morning again, John.
Hey, thanks again for having me. It's good to be back up here.
Well, appreciate you joining us, as busy as you are, traveling the world. Pleasure to serve with John on the Georgia Logistics Summit Executive Committee this year. And we were also very appreciative that John and his company generously sponsored our new Veterans Initiative. So appreciate that support there, sir. So we just spoke about the ever-demanding customers that are really requiring more and more supply chain performance in retail, and for that matter, all elsewhere. So to meet that demand, organizations are really looking for more qualified talent. And then when they have the talent, they're looking to develop that talent. Right, John?
Absolutely. We view supply chain now as really the most critical component, especially in retail. If you don't have a well-oiled supply chain, you're operating at a competitive disadvantage. And if you don't have the talent that you need to run a well-oiled supply chain, then you're definitely at a competitive disadvantage.
And recent research shows that it's really top of mind for business and supply chain executives. Speak to the planning. How are organizations planning when it comes to, you know, not only talent acquisition but also talent development?
Well, they're planning and they're looking at what the overall corporate goals are, how they fit, how supply chain fits in there, and then do I have the assets to be able to live up to these 1 year, 3 year, 5 year goals? And, you know, it starts with the talent, as I mentioned. And, you know, there's a shortage of talent within the supply chain. Universities are really starting to ramp up. There's been a huge growth in the number of students in the top 25 universities, over a 40% increase in the number of students with supply chain majors. You've got over 150 different universities offering bachelor degree programs. And so, but there's the universities are still behind the times when it comes to supply chain and developing the talent that the organizations need to meet these very important corporate goals and deliver to the shareholders.
And the modern day supply chain professional is not your grandma's supply chain professional, right? It's moving, it's evolving. Let's talk about the next, you know, 3 to 4 years. What are some of the areas that you're seeing the modern day supply chain professional look a little bit different than years past?
They're much more technical. They're more analytical. They're less operational. And that has pros and cons. On the pro side, you're bringing in perhaps a more intelligent employee that long-term is going to be a better long-term employee from a technology and analytical standpoint. However, they're coming in with less hands-on work experience. They have less operational experience. And so they're getting put into jobs where They can do the analysis and they can work with technology, but they don't have the common sense when it comes to operations. The younger generations these days, they don't come up through the ranks of UPS working in the hubs. Those jobs are not desirable to them.
Mm. Now, what about the challenge of your kind of the integration of this type of person, a younger person that has these technological skills, into being managed by people who have come up through the ranks, who maybe can't empathize as much with the younger person and maybe gets frustrated with their not getting the big picture or not getting how this is how it's done or because it's always been done. And you have the younger person who has kind of less patience and attention span to really care about how it was done before, but they know the best way to do things.
It's a major issue. You're dealing with a class of cultures.
Right. Aren't you? It's kind of oil and vinegar here, right?
It is. It's you're dealing with really two different mindsets. You know, the old school operator that has, you know, done it for years. They know how to run it and they're often not receptive to change. I've done it this way. It's worked.
Right.
But with technology really taking over logistics and
the
supply
speed
chain
that is taking over is that's dramatic. It's not been a slow evolution that, oh, this took 20 years and now we do it this way. This could be like 2 years ago we used to do it and we can't do it that way anymore or we'll go out of business.
2 weeks ago, it's a forever issue that will have two different perspectives that need to, they have the same goals, right? So as a business leader within an organization, I face this all the time. So the skill that we need to bring to bear is how do we partner together,
right,
and have more team focused events that help cultivate that there's good thoughts in both sides.
Right. And we're all in this together.
Yes. Good point. Good point, Matt. So John, speaking of technology, we were talking about an interesting approach Home Depot is taking. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, Home Depot has announced that they're hiring over 1,000 new technology employees, most of them here in Atlanta, although there are going to be some in Dallas. Home Depot is well known for building things internally as opposed to outsourcing. And over 90% of the code, I believe, is written internally by Home Depot employees rather than outsourced to outside firms. And they see that, you know, there's a great need for people that understand technology and can develop technology because technology helps automate things. I also think that they're hedging their bets against potentially Amazon locating HQ2 in Atlanta and have gone out and proactively
hired all the
are taking talent off the shelves.
The board, right?
Exactly.
We're taking pieces off the board. So, go ahead, Scott.
So, how does that factor into their overall strategic plan, you think?
I think that the, you know, Home Depot runs very efficiently and they use technology to help them run efficiently. That helps take costs out of the supply chains. It makes their operations run more efficient and fluid. And when you're hiring this great technology talent where you can build the apps, where you can build the programs, where you can automate processes and take some of the human element. Obviously, they don't take all the human element because people want to, you know, talk to people inside a Home Depot store. But they've done a great job at becoming very efficient with great margins because they invest in technology and they invest in people that have technology backgrounds.
Mm. So in an era where supply chain costs and many large organizations are growing and retailers are trying to figure out a way not to pass that along to customers, right? Because all customers are looking for discounts these days. This is one area where Home Depot is going to be able to reinvest in the business to protect that, not only that margin, but also protect that pricing for their customers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, what's the pros and cons of them kind of coding 90% of their digital and controlling their technology?
Well, when you do everything internally,
because that's an anomaly, right? Most companies don't have that higher percentage.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can have an isolated viewpoint of the world. If you do everything internally and you're not getting advice from outside parties and consultants, then you can become insulated. Mm-hmm. And then that is a potential risk.
But the pro is that it's proprietary and it's all yours and it's your way.
The pro is that consultants are often very expensive. I can attest to that. They control the development. It's more secure. They don't, you know, you don't have other people that understand their technology as well. It's all proprietary. And so they've got a protective layer around that technology that people that rely heavily on outside sources don't have.
Mm-hmm. So switching gears a little bit, you were citing some statistics as it relates to more and more the student enrollment in supply chain management programs is growing. I've seen a variety of studies where for everyone, and it depends on which firm you want to subscribe to, their numbers, but for every one qualified candidate that comes out of these schools or has several years of experience, there can be anywhere from 5 to 11 good jobs available, right? Depending on which source you're looking at. So huge demand. Let's talk about one of the other things we chatted about in our warm-up conversation is not just attracting students to those majors, but also attracting women to the supply chain education offerings, but it's also to the industry itself. Any thoughts or perspective on that, John?
It is a challenge. Historically, and even now, the number of women that are enrolled in supply chain majors, the universities, or even, you know, working in logistics and supply chain for major companies, it's much less than males. It has been a male dominant. Logistics has been a male dominated profession for the last 50-100 years, and we need to move out of that that scenario, and it needs to become more attractive to women. You know, when you think about logistics, people have an old view of an operator,
lifting boxes or forklifts.
Your grandma's supply chain professional.
Yeah.
So it needs a rebranding.
It needs a rebranding. Supply chain needs to become more sexy.
Right.
So, and as we've talked about in previous shows, especially with our good friend Elba Freha Gallagher, we can't begin to effectively attack the skills gap until we effectively attack the gender gap that exists in supply chain, manufacturing, and other industries. So good points there. So let's switch gears again. No pun intended. We're going to be talking about the trucking capacity crunch. So give us a quick update. What's the landscape look like out there, John?
It doesn't look good for shippers. It looks very good for carriers.
Right.
Capacity constraints are at an all-time high. We're seeing spot quotes up well over 20% where they were at this time last year. We're seeing contract pricing up, you know, over 12% this year versus last year. ELD mandate rolled out April 1st, where drivers can't drive more than 11 hours. Obviously, those were the rules prior to April 1st, but now
you can keep score, right?
Now there's technology that can keep track of it. And that's a great example of how technology is coming into play where the, you know, used to use an old paper log and it was based on the trust system. Mm-hmm. And, and when it's on the trust system and people are fudging it, that's when accidents happen. Yeah. And that's why insurance rates are so high and workers' compensation so high.
Ripple effect.
Ripple effect.
No doubt. So let's talk about how 3PLs are helping the situation.
Well, 3PLs are helping the situation because they have relationships with a lot of different asset-based carriers, and they have economies of scale. They spend a tremendous amount on transportation and fulfillment, and they can help secure capacity when you're in a bind. And so a lot of companies are depending on 3PLs rather than going straight to the trucking companies, because they simply can't get the trucks and they're having to rely on the 3PLs to help them get the assets to move the goods.
Mm. And 3PLs also are investing more and more in technology, which continues to be a big theme of this today's episode, right?
For sure. If you look at apps being built to broker loads, you know, 2 years, 3 years ago, you couldn't broker a load through an app, you know? And so that's making it much easier to do the transaction than picking up the phone, calling the broker and doing all that type of work. You can do it electronically now.
Yeah.
And in real time. I mean, as the consumer is more and more comfortable with those kind of apps.
Yeah. Demanding that information real time. And you know what? So Lee, I think we say every episode how technology is a theme of today's show. We got to drop that because it's really just a way of life, right?
Well, and technology means different things in each one of these kind of subjects that we're talking about. So we're just calling it technology, but the speed, the computing power has changed dramatically and it's increasing and getting cheaper. And then that's permeating every aspect of every business, not just supply chain.
Life. That's right.
And Scott, well put. On that on the ELD mandates, I think that has an impact, obviously, on truck stops and the ability for drivers to get their downtime. If I encourage any listeners to go out to the Atlanta Regional Commission, they did a recent survey on transportation trends around the metro, and one of the big findings was there's not enough truck stop facilities for the drivers, specifically in the Atlanta metro. So check that out.
Great point. Drivers are searching for over an hour at a time just to find a spot to rest and to park. So speaking of ELD, John, how is that? How do you see that impacting the situation? Better or worse than expected?
I think it's driving up costs, certainly for the trucking companies. And when you drive up the costs, they like to pass the cost on to the consumer. So they can still make their margin and reinvest in their business. So
is really popular for consumers. Consumers love that.
But is it that the costs are rising during this transition, but eventually will kind of level out? Because you mentioned that part of the problem was that there were accidents, insurance going up. Will that kind of trickle down and make those things get less and lower over time?
That's the thought process. Yes. If you look at projections, there's a lot of additional cost up front. But you reap the benefits over the long term. And so you should see decreases insurance for over the long term, not immediate. But yeah, you should see a trickle-down effect where there are cost savings in other areas now that this is being implemented, now that this has been implemented.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And to balance those costs too, opportunities will be created for new employees to come into the market or capacity for equipment as well.
Great point. Good point, Matt. So switching gears from ELD, let's touch on this final piece in John's segment, air freight. So what's going on in the air freight space?
Air freight space is much like the trucking market. There is a lack of capacity. And what you have is e-commerce is driving massive increases in air shipments, cross-border volumes, imports coming in from Asia. Where everybody, you know, the consumer thinks that shipping is free and they want it today. And it's very hard to deliver that. You can't send it via ocean unless you're planning way ahead and you want to have a lot of inventory on hand. And that's not really the model for most, especially retailers these days. So you've got capacity constraints. Most of the major air cargo providers have orders for planes in UPS, FedEx, Atlas Air, all are waiting on additional planes. You also have a shortage of pilots. Yeah. FedEx has recently introduced a new training program to try and get more pilots into the fold with this increase in air freight. So it's as you have shortages in drivers and trucks and truckload, right now, we have a shortage in aircraft equipment and planes, as well as pilots to fly those planes, much of it driven by e-commerce.
And think about the factor of ocean versus air. Hmm. It's a 5 to 7 X factor.
Right.
Like 5 weeks plus the processing versus air is next day.
And we want it as humans now. We want it now. Yeah. So all of these factors that you're describing, John, we've seen increases of over 30%. Did I read that right? 30% increase on some air freight?
Yeah. Yep. Largest increases in over a decade.
Wow. Within 6 to 9 months, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So so to conclude our segment with John Haber here with Spend Management Experts, I want to talk more about what SME, how you serve your clients. You're working with some heavy hitters, Barnes & Noble, Canon USA, Bristol Myers Squibb. Tell us a little bit about how you're working to save money for your customers.
We operate in four key areas of the supply chain: transportation, distribution, fulfillment, and warehousing. And we provide consulting services to come in and look at within our clients what they're spending money, how they're set up in these areas, and we really help them optimize. We help them optimize their cost structures. We help them optimize the service levels, the modes of transportation they're using, and we help them optimize the network where they're locating their facilities. We help them optimize their distribution. So we're a trusted business advisor. We come in and we add bandwidth to the team. We frequently do it on a shared savings model, so there's no risk. We come in and, as opposed to many other consulting firms that want to charge you a big fee just to be on site and don't execute, we're all about execution. We come in, we run analysis, we forecast what we can save you, but you don't pay us unless we save you the money in most cases. Mm.
And you were just featured last week. You're telling us in the warm-up on NPR and then 11 Live locally, right?
Yes, I have been doing a lot of discussions about Amazon HQ2 and different factors that Amazon is weighing when they're making the decision on where to locate the new headquarters.
So clearly, industry expert, subject matter expert, company, your clients are tapping into what you and your team have, what you've seen. You've been there and done it, basically, in many ways.
Been there and done it. I actually spent a decade right down the road at UPS's corporate headquarters. So I've been in the logistics space for a long time. But we live the world of logistics every day. And we're trying to educate our customers as well as the people that read our blogs and read our news articles on just the importance of logistics. We think that the supply chain can give you a competitive advantage, or it's going to be a competitive disadvantage. And those companies that don't make it a priority, they may not be around in a year or two.
That's right. Love it. Well, final question for you. How can we find out more information about your company, Spend Management Experts?
You can find us at www.spendmgmt.com.
Now, what's the pain that a prospect is having where you guys, it's worth having a conversation with you guys?
Well, the pain is often that they're paying too much and they need to cut costs. They're faced with lowered budgets. They have less resources. And so we come in and we look at how much cost you need to eliminate. We can help add bandwidth and run the analyses. And then really come in and help optimize things with a structure that is very efficient. We move very fast and we're very effective at helping companies optimize, especially costs.
Perfect. So, John, thanks for joining us again to our audience. Learn more about Spend Management Experts at spendmgmt.com. Thanks, John Haber.
Thanks for having me.
So up next today on Supply Chain Now Radio, we are welcoming Matt Bean, General Manager of a large Metro Atlanta manufacturing campus with Kick Custom Products. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Thank you, Scott.
So before we get started picking Matt's brain a bit, I'd like to thank him for volunteering yet again. So yesterday, Matt and I and a team of volunteers were out in Livingston Elementary in Newton County, where we were conducting Supply Chain 101. With 25 extremely sharp fifth graders.
This is your lemonade stand?
Yes. Yes. Lemonade supply chain. Plus, yeah. We got some lead through our program. But we were talking supply chain, all things supply chain, the end-to-end supply chain with 25 fifth graders. And what an incredible experience. Right, Matt?
Yes, it was.
So key takeaways.
One, just a backdrop. When Scott first approached me on speaking to fifth graders about supply chain, I initially was thinking, well, why aren't we talking to high school? And he highlighted that we need to get this earlier on into
upstream,
the conversation.
Upstream.
So instead of the students thinking about being a lawyer, an astronaut, an MLB player, that they think about being somebody in the supply chain industry.
That's right.
So I was excited about that. And this is the second school. I think it's your, how many schools have you been to, Scott?
That was our 19th session, sixth school, and about 435 fourth and fifth graders that we have shared supply chain with.
Right. Yep.
Who's keeping track of them?
Scott's working on his own private label lemonade that he can actually be selling to these children.
Please, you're letting my secret out. Shared it with
them. All the kids, 98% of them like lemonade. So that's right.
Scott, can you give me just a 30-second bleep on what the work the seminar is? And two, maybe if we have some school administrators listening or some parents with young kids, we can talk to their schools. How do they get involved in this?
Yeah. So real quick, this is part of the APEX Atlanta Skills Gap Task Force. We go into school with a team of volunteers in about 55 to 60 minutes. We talk about what is supply chain. We give examples of the automotive supply chain, the chocolate bar supply chain, the lemonade supply chain. And then we talk about some examples of careers you'll find in end-to-end supply chain, as well as some name brand companies that utilize armies of supply chain talent that are cool brands, you know, Nike and Amazon, Starbucks, brands that kids really understand and consume. So very interactive. When we kicked off this project back in November, we were like, man, it's going to take 30 or 40 minutes for these kids to understand what supply chain is. Not at all. Not even 5 minutes.
30 seconds.
30 seconds, really. So it's been a great experience. If folks want more information on how we can come into your school, shoot us an email at info@apexatlanta.org. But, you know, the whole program is driven by volunteers and practitioners like Matt Bean, who come out, want to spend time with the next generation and want to interact and engage and you know, really encourage these elementary kids. So thank you for your time, Matt.
Yep.
And we're looking for two things, more sessions, more schools to support.
Right.
As well as sponsors, corporate sponsors, to allow us to do this on a bigger scale.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, like if you're mentioning their name during the thing.
That's right.
There should be some checks flowing.
Lee, I like that. We got to bring Lee out to the next one. That's terrific. And working on our private label, Lemonade.
Exactly.
So talking about talent development and supply chain, clearly awareness of supply chain careers and opportunities is a big piece upstream, But once they're in, Matt, kind of continuing today, one of today's themes is, you know, education and talent development. So 20 years of industry experience, leadership experience that you have, mostly in manufacturing. So what are some of the top subjects that come up front of mind when, you know, we hear about improvement, continuous improvement? What are some of those usual suspects?
Right. So I'm in the continuous improvement mind frame. You know, that's really what my team is all about. And continuous improvement comes when a problem is present. And how many times do you hear about when a problem is present that it was operator error or something to do with training, right? Whether it was an audit that you had, a safety situation, a quality escape, anything in the financial world, the medical world. If there are any errors or problems, it turns into continuous improvement. And it usually ties back to some form of education or a gap thereof.
Mm.
The other side of it is that when we get into continuous improvement inside industry, inside employers, we ask the question to engage the employees, what needs improvement? Every single time in that, the top 10, communication, training, engagement comes up, right? So what I'd like to talk about is our experience and some of my perspective on what's required around how you create an education strategy within your workforce.
Yep. And what I like in our pre-show warm-up conversation is we talk about the three buckets. You talk about the education, talent development from an employer standpoint, an employee standpoint, and an educator standpoint. So talking about from an employer's perspective, you know, share some what have you seen that's effective and what are some of the things that Kit Custom Products is doing?
Sure. So as far as the employer, that's where we're going to have the most control, the most influence, and be able to impact the strategy the most. The main areas that we focus around is to have a strategy around employee behaviors and culture. And then the process, that's the second area, which all companies have processes and tasks. And you know, you have to learn how to run a piece of equipment or run a program or create a program. Back office, front office things. And then communication is the third area. And around communication, it also involves engagement. So we have a strategy internally for our employees to focus on, yes, behaviors and not just always processes. And yes, communication engagement and not just always just the process.
Now, how important is it at the very top to just choose the people you work with wisely and to have them come in with as many of these, at least philosophically aligned, right, from a culture fit, that they're at least in the,
so
the
that's
neighborhood.
A, that's a great lead into the next area of our focus is around the employee. So we have specific purposeful actions to, as much as we can, control the hiring process. And it's an opportunity. It's a whole nother conversation around, do we get it right every time? We don't. Most of the time when you're talking across the table with a prospective candidate, they're very engaged. They're very willing. They're passionate. They give examples about how they can do and will do and solve your problems. And they're the right person to get the job done. So we hire them, and we're not always right. So the key comes back to education. So as far as the employer portion of it, it's to get it right as best we can, and then to manage internally how we can move people forward to meet our goals. So this brings me to the employee's responsibility as
so
well.
Can I stop you for just a second? Because I think that's what you just shared there. What I heard is you have certain organizations that when they hire Jim or Sally or you know, employee ABC, they're that person is the same person they were 5 years, 10 years later, right? But what you described there is how keeping the employee moving forward. So knowing more today than it did yesterday, knowing more this hour than it did maybe even last hour. Is that a core philosophy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Our position is not to hire to fire, right? So not everyone has the skills exactly to meet the needs we have, especially if you're evolving.
Right. So that's your assumption going in. So as long as they have the capacity to want to learn,
right,
that has to be a criteria in the hire.
That's right.
Right. Because some people don't. Some people are like,
but they'll say they do.
So that's, you have to challenge, have a way to kind of figure out if they're lying or not. Right.
Well, I believe them until I hear or see otherwise. Right. Mm. So, yes. So yeah, there's some faith in that.
Yes. Yeah. But still, that's a core belief. And a lot of companies don't share that same. I mean, they look at it as a labor cost, and they don't look at it as a huge professional development opportunity for folks that join the organization. So, so shifting gears, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I think that's an important distinction. So talk about talent and development from an employee standpoint. What do they need to bring to the table? What's their skin in the game?
Well, some of the employees' expectations on the and talking still about the employee, but the employer side of it is, we have to be focused on our onboarding, use best practices around skills assessments, the development, progressive, management and how we support people with their learning opportunities. So what the employee's responsibility, the piece that we look for is that they need to be teachable, coachable, willing. Right, that's the key. As long as somebody's willing, then we can work with them. They have to be intentional about what they want. Engage, participative, speak up, and ultimately to have some tolerance for that, for people to learn and not have the answers every time. Mm. And kind of going back to the concept that you brought up about the forever issue of two different cultures clashing, right? So we need employees that can bring some professionalism and tolerance for learning together.
Now, what about like resilience and the capacity to take risks and be okay with things not working out or changing gears that, you might have invested a lot of the time in one area, but as we talked about earlier, things change dramatically in short periods of time. So yesterday's process may not be tomorrow's process.
Right. So two sides to that, the employer to create a culture that will accept some level of risk as long as some level of processes are followed from the employee. The employee side is to have some open-mindedness and to be able to evolve, right? So that gets back to the willingness piece. As long as they're willing to grow and the employer is willing to work with them, there's a partnership. Mm. If that willingness fades, then usually people will end up moving on or some other decision is made.
So there's an equal yoke there. Yeah. Right. Okay. All right.
So the last area that we really are focused on is the educators. So as far as the educators, there's minimal control over that. We have the focus internal and we have the focus external. And the internal side, it's around like who teaches, right? Who is going to be, if you have willing employees to learn, to grow, and to support your business, who is going to teach them within your organization? That's a whole nother conversation as well, is about how do we teach? I'm learning every day still how to interact and engage with employees to help various people from varied backgrounds and how to learn and how to engage. So who is teaching? You know, we have our, there's people that are natural talent. Mm-hmm. You know, we can say, oh, that employee is awesome. They're great. They get it. We can tell them one thing and they take off and they evolve. Now, is that real teaching or is that individual, right? So then the ultimate focus is around our leaders and managers, that we look for them to, on the continuum, to be the teacher, the coach, and then the mentor, right? So depending on
and
where
the manager.
And the manager to manage the issues, right? We have SMEs or subject matter experts that will develop and grow. Sometimes we bring consultants in, and then
like professional trainers to train on specific things.
We need more of that, right? Mm. So if it's the consultant, we would put in quotes that we would assume that they're a professional trainer, but that's also varied as well as how they come in and engage with the employees. So we'll work through different areas on that. And then we'll send people out to seminars, right? So you get those ad hoc teachings that are 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, right? The external side is an interesting situation that we're seeing, and we're starting to really get our hands around what this means. And it kind of ties into the educators, right? As far as what before they come to us. So, you know, formative years are at home. The parents are the teachers, right? As we move into our 6 to 12 year old range, that elementary school, 12 to 18, you're in high school and middle school, high school. And then from that point, that 18 year old.
Yeah, they know everything. So you don't have to worry about that person, right?
So now what's the path? Which way do they go? And what a lot of these folks will go right into business, right into corporations. So the educators of the 18 year olds are the employers. And it goes right back to, at that point, there's a heavy focus around behaviors. Again, the processes will still be there. And then how people communicate and engage, right? Mm. So that gets us back to that strategy that we have to have some purposeful actions around all three of those areas. So 18-year-olds need a lot more focus around how to work within an environment that requires teamwork, right? And then some folks will go into associate's degrees. They'll go, hopefully, we continue to see some support around trade schools. We're seeing a little bit more.
Like a certificate rather than a college degree.
Right.
Or professional certification.
Right.
Professional certifications, whether it's, the trades that we need, right? And then there are people that obviously will go on to college and universities and progress into masters and PhDs and get very specialized, right? So the point here is that if we step back and think about it, 18-year-olds to 26-year-olds are entering the workforce, and then they spend 40 to 50 years in the workforce. Who's educating them? The companies. So I'm one of those companies, and I'm recognizing that, hey, we have to have a good strategy around this. And then from how we interact with the trade schools, with the consultants of the world, with the Apex of the world, the Georgia Techs of the world, mm-hmm. how we interact and partner with them will help us progress.
Now, are you partnering with them in the sense that they're developing kind of curricula that is specific to what you need so that at the end of the day, they're kind of producing?
Well, yeah, I'm going to bring you on. You're going to come back to work with me today. We are actively working with one of the trade schools that's close to us to do exactly that. Their whole lives are teaching, right? They have a passion for teaching. So the curriculum, how you develop it, how you connect to people, how you put I call it the Lego communication, right? So there aren't any words, and somehow, some way, through pictures, we create Legos, or our children do, right? They create these massive things that
I still do sometimes.
There's no words, right?
Ben, my son Ben sucks me in. So
yes. So I often ponder and I wonder, and I actually am continuing to look for these opportunities of where are the teachers? So we have all these teachers, and there's all kinds of conversations around how they're compensated, how they're valued, how they're respected, and they go through a lot. From 0 to 18 to 26 years. But how about the teachers getting into industry, right? Mm-hmm. And what if one teacher was in every single corporation, right? There's
what about kind of like online learning and things like that, where it's kind of at the pace of the student in their own environment? Are you implementing any of that?
We see that from, so this is the issue is of to create that. CBTs, computer-based training. When you're a larger organization, you have the opportunities or the resources to create that internally. There are opportunities, and I need to dig into myself. I'm sure there's software and programs out there.
But like there's like some of the universities have these MOOCs, the massive online courses where they're...
Oh, right. Like a Coursera or something
right,
like that.
Where
right.
they're out there and they have learning sometimes free mm-hmm. on different areas that are relevant. Is that trickled into the supply chain world?
Most definitely.
We personally have not pursued that other than we've seen with the trade schools that we're partnering with, a mix of that. So there's in-person, on-site, and also some form of online. So there is a mix of that that we're seeing through this partnership we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely open to learning more about opportunities there.
Yeah, I think it comes down to preference and what works for different mm-hmm. companies, right? I think you know, with online training, you've got that challenge of engagement. These very common sense challenges, right? Whether it's a webinar, whether it's a Skype type session, you know, engagement and really making sure you're bringing it home and folks are actively listening and contributing. You know, these are critical hallmarks of successful training programs. So it kind of just depends on what works for the organization, right?
It's a great area to pursue because yeah. The time is always the issue, right? Mm-hmm. The 40 hours or what, you know, so that you're paying somebody to break them out and to carve out time to say, oh, you're going to sit down for 4 hours a week or 8 hours a week to learn something. So if you have online opportunities, the learning can happen outside of the workday.
Yep. And this is a great aspect of the conversation to segue into the next segment. Matt and John, we could sit down with y'all for hours and pick your brain. I appreciate what you've shared. Matt, I like your perspective. I mean, I think you and the culture that you describe at Kit Custom Products, it's appealing to work there. You know, it's appealing the culture, the empowerment, the development opportunities, how when you know, you step foot in there day one and day 10, day 1000, you're going to be an advanced person. You're going to pick up new skill sets, new responsibilities. So I think that's appealing in this war for talent that we all see and feel every day, right?
We try, right?
Yeah.
In our mission, we have the words, creating a learning culture and a continuous improvement culture.
Love it. Well, thanks for spending time with us today on Supply Chain Now Radio, Matt. And thanks again for, you know, it's not just lip service. Matt's out there, you know, engaging with the next generation and planting these seeds of awareness for opportunities. So appreciate all your support and leadership.
Yeah. Like, what's a website if somebody wants to learn more?
As far as our company?
Yeah.
It would be KIKCustomProducts.com.
Perfect. All right, Matt, thanks. Appreciate it. So speaking of training and especially professional training, we're now going to be featuring Mr. Chris Barnes on Supply Chain Now Radio. Chris is president and executive director of Apex Atlanta, one of our sponsors, and an occasional co-host on the show. We're glad to have him today. Whenever he's not saving the world one warehouse at a time, he's right here in Atlanta with us. So this week he's back from his global travels. Chris, where have you been?
Just primarily on the East Coast this year.
Okay.
So I've been keeping it local.
Okay, keeping it local.
Yeah, trying to again save the East Coast one warehouse at a time. So, but I just I appreciate Matt and John being here. It's nice to see their perspectives. You know, I you can get myopic in what you're doing all day, but it's nice to see their perspective from a shipping perspective and also from a spend analysis perspective. So
and leadership perspective
and the leadership. Yeah, I mean it's neat to hear that they're basically preaching to the Apex altar in terms of. Professional development, talent development, the things that we're trying to do for companies.
So speaking of Apex and speaking of some big news, what's new with Apex Atlanta?
Well, I just, before I get into what's new, it relates back to specifically what Lee had just asked about a few moments ago. Massive open online courses are a significant disruption in the training space, not only for Apex. We've seen fewer people attending workshops and seminars in exchange for low cost or possibly free certifications from companies like or organizations like MIT. I've heard you can go out and get a 2-year supply chain management certification from them all free. Of course, it takes a lot of discipline. And what I'm seeing is even companies that or people, individuals that want to get self-study as an option for their certifications. I'm weekly talking to people that they've purchased the books. They've started down that path. They just don't have the discipline to do it. So they're looking more to get back into a classroom environment. So that is the big thing that we're seeing. Obviously, the Apex Atlanta has seen a drop off in attendance as well. So what we've done is partnered with, and this is a big thing, I think, nationally for all Apex chapters as well as Apex National. We've partnered with Georgia Tech, their Supply Chain and Logistics Institute, to offer Apex classes as a core part of their management series programs.
And that's specifically, we're talking about the CSCP, which is your Certified Supply Chain Professional, widely regarded APEX certification. And then the new one, which is Certified Logistics Transportation Distribution, which has been really well received in the 2 years or so it's been released, right?
Yeah, they're both really well received. They're more at a high level. Supply chain, CSCP is more of a 10,000 foot view of the supply chain. It's kind of from inbound to outbound. What is the supply chain doing? What is it? How can you manage it? CLTD is more on the outbound side. It's transportation, logistics, distribution. And the historical favorite for APEX members has been CPIM. And that's more focused on operations management, inbound, materials management, production planning focus. But we're offering all three, primarily through Georgia Tech, starting July 23rd. That week is a 2.5 day course of CLTD, followed by CSCP. So if you're really, really interested and really out to just to kind of be bored for a week, that's a good way to go out and spend it at the Georgia Tech conference.
Quite the salesman there. Quite the salesman.
Really sold it.
It is hardcore studying.
So our partnering with Georgia Tech is nothing new. So APEX Atlanta has been around for almost 6 years. We've got roughly 650-700 members. But in the last 3 or 4 years, Georgia Tech's Supply Chain Logistics Institute's Managing Director, Tim Brown, joined our Executive Advisory Board. We started sponsoring Supply Chain Day, which is a very practical job fair type approach where they're bringing on 15 to 20 leading employers to the Institute to interact with hundreds of students. That's been a great experience sponsoring that. This what you're describing and announcing, that's really an extension of a current partnership, right?
Sure, yeah. Tim Brown has really stepped up. He's doing some great things, not only in Atlanta, around the Southeast, even in Panama. I know they do classes in Panama. So obviously Georgia Tech has an international exposure. We're expecting to get people to want to fly in and take the classes. The good thing is, as I think Scott mentioned earlier, it's part of the management series. If you look at their website, Georgia Tech website, you can under Supply Chain and Logistics Institute, / education, they can you can take an APEX class as part of their 4-part series. So you can take up to 4 classes that they offer, and you can get another certificate that kind of says, "Hey, I'm baptized and certified by Georgia Tech."
Yeah,
which class. I think you can take the test as well for APEX. So each course has a test. You become certified. It's almost like a CPA for supply chain professionals. But what I'm expecting is people might take the class, forego the exam, which is another cost, and just get the Georgia Tech certificate. So I think that's going to be big.
Yep. 2.5 day boot camp style, which the pilot workshops are, right? And the kickoff.
Yeah.
Kickoff
is the 23rd. So the first class CLTD is 2.5 days. Right now, the market value is $2,400 as an investment. That's per class. So CLTD is $2,400. CSCP is $2,400. You can take them both. You can take one individually. As I had mentioned, I don't know. We'll have a lot of people taking both. That's a pretty intense 5 days of learning. But it's really designed to be more of an accelerated learning. Historically, we offer the classes more. It's basically 40 hours of studying, face-to-face time. We typically offer that maybe like 5 consecutive Fridays or 5 consecutive Saturdays, 8 hours a day. So you can see 2.5 hours of studying, packing 40 hours into that time is going to be tough. But it's just really how we present the materials and how the learners are going to be able to adapt.
Now, who should take this?
Well, it's kind of back to what Matt and John were talking about. I think, from John's perspective, we talked about getting educated students practical experience. How do you do that? That's partly what we're doing. We're able to get people that have the education side, maybe give them the additional practical experience of what is more specific supply chain things. What I like to see is having these classes, we have different people from different backgrounds. So it can be a supply chain analyst. It can be, we have a class starting tomorrow in Lawrenceville. Basically, they're warehouse professionals, people supervising and managing warehouses. So it's anywhere from the doers, the day-to-day people doing the work, to the managers and all the way up to the planning side.
So it's important for the business owners that are in these industries to shared this information with their employees to let them know that this is a chance for advancement and extra, more learning that can help them in their career.
Yeah. And some of it's, as Matt had talked about, maybe you get people that start their careers right out of high school. They don't maybe necessarily understand what a supply chain is overall. They know what they're doing day in and day out. They don't understand how transportation impacts warehousing, how production impacts getting product into the warehouse. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we can take those people, give them this supply chain training, and then they become hopefully a broader based understanding.
We'll bring students from Livingston will know.
There you go. Yes, I was about to say that. You beat me to it, Matt. That's perfect for Supply Chain 101.
We also, the Georgia Tech thing is huge. It's just a big announcement for us. However, let's not forget our roots. We offer classes with individual companies around Atlanta, around the Southeast. For example, we're starting a class. It's going to be 5 Fridays with a company up in Lawrenceville. It's basically 8 hours for a Friday. They've also offered to allow other individuals to come into the class. Now, probably by now it's too late to sign up for the class. But what I enjoy about that is they have 4 people from their company they're hosting. We have about 4 other students coming in just from other companies around. And what that really does do well, but when they start hearing input from the other 4 people from 4 different companies, I think it's going to be a better learning experience overall.
Completely agree.
You can also take self-study. If you want, you can buy the books online. I would encourage you to buy them from Apex Atlanta. It's a win-win. And you can also go online and look up things like Apex CLTD Coach. They have a blog. Mr. CSCP is another website with a blog. And Apex Exam Warehouse is another resource.
Love it. And one final note, I don't think we mentioned it, but these courses, while they're a locally driven partnership between Apex Atlanta and Georgia Tech Supply Chain Logistics Institute, they're all based on the very proven and respective Apex body of knowledge, which is the group of standards and protocols and best practices. So great, great news there. Chris, appreciate all your leadership with the chapter. This has been some heavy lifting to get it across the finish line. But I think for our consumers, our members, the companies that plug in Apex, huge opportunity. And I think we'll be able to serve them better.
Thank you.
Now, can they go on the website to get information about this?
Yeah, you can either go to apexatlanta.org and look at the different classes we have offered, or you can go straight to the Georgia Tech website, which I used to have, Lee, but I don't have it anymore.
Best bet is to shoot us an email at info@apexatlanta.org, and we will take a white glove approach to making sure we answer questions. So great work. Appreciate your leadership, Chris, and thanks for being here today and a brief departure from your global travels.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up on a couple of opportunities. Again, want to thank John, Matt, and Chris for being here today. Our first opportunity, so coming off the heels of a successful Georgia Logistics Summit and MODEX, we took a joint industry association of Georgia approach where we bandied together 7 different industry associations to serve as a host sponsor. Well, part of the aim there from a bigger picture standpoint is to continue to cultivate relationships across these associations that really serve different segments of the end-to-end supply chain. So we've got a networking hour at Keegan's in Smyrna. Ever been there, Chris?
Never.
Keegan's. On May 31st from 5:30 to 7:30. So any of the participating members or any associations that do serve supply chain, maybe we just hadn't reached yet, you're more than welcome to join us there for that networking hour or two. Next month on Supply Chain Now Radio, we're going to be featuring Tammy Grasick with Lund International, which was just named the Large Manufacturer of the Year for Gwinnett County, a very successful automotive manufacturer, and Bo Gruber with the Effective Syndicate, one of our executive advisory board members. Webinars on tap. Speaking of online training, if we do anything at Supply Chain Now Radio beyond this live monthly podcast, we offer a growing variety of webinars. We've got upcoming sessions focused on subject matter such as tackling the Amazon effect, business intelligence and data analytics, omnichannel fulfillment, business metrics, reverse logistics, and much, much more. So find out more information at apexatlanta.org. And special note, and Chris, I might get this date wrong, but we created an Apex Atlanta Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, and it really was stood up to recognize volunteer leaders that have spent decades or made significant contributions to our storied chapter. And we are very proud to recognize Mr. Mike Roman, who's going to be inducted to the Apex Atlanta Hall of Fame and is going to have a bust up in Canton, Ohio, right?
Wow.
Yellow jacket, sure. Whole nine yards. But yeah,
he's a longtime contributor, not only to Apex nationally, the body of knowledge, but the Apex Atlanta chapter. I think the event's going to be the third Tuesday in...
Fourth
Tuesday in June. I think that's the 27th. It's up in Alpharetta at the Newtown Park.
Yep. And Lee, any guesses on how folks can get more information on that?
I'd say apexatlanta.org.
Or shoot us an email at info@apexatlanta.org. I want to thank our sponsors, of course, Apex Atlanta. We're here to serve. If we can serve your organization in any way, shape, or form, reach out. And Talent Stream, who always, speaking of talent, who's helping it make it easier for organizations to find talent in the engineering, the manufacturing, and the supply chain space. More information, check out our website, or you can email me direct. Here's a new email address, evp@apexatlanta.org, Executive Vice President, evp@apexatlanta.org. And again, great show today. I want to thank John Haber with Spend Management Experts, Matt Bean with Kick Custom Products, and Chris Barnes, our fearless leader at Apex Atlanta. I want to thank Katie and Lee, and that's a wrap. Lee, did I miss anything?
I think you got it all. And I think this show, Supply Chain Now Radio, is the most important show we do here at the Business Radio X Network, because it's touching on something that touches all of Atlanta, all of Georgia, and the Southeast, because we are the supply chain capital of the Southeast.
East Coast. Sometimes universe, sometimes East Coast. But always a pleasure.
It's a moving target. Things change so rapidly. And thank you, Scott, for putting this show together every month. And this is Lee Cantor for Kid Galley. We will see you all next time on Supply Chain Now Radio.